Hello, and welcome to The Fifth Race, a Stargate podcast. This is Pegasus Edition, Episode 4, 38 minutes. I'm Justin Nolan.
And I'm Tim Phillips.
How you doing, Tim?
I'm all right.
Anything new?
Let's see. Not since the extended Harry Potter discussion from the SG-1 episode. I mean, do you think there's going to be people that just listen to the Atlantis episodes and don't listen to...
Possibly. Should we cut that out and put it in here, too? Or do you want to just go over it all again?
No, we can leave that off. Talk
about my New Kids on the Block concert.
Could talk about Women's World Cup. Congratulations to Japan. You probably don't even know.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't watch sports.
Yeah. Women's World Cup. The U.S. lost to Japan on penalty kicks.
I watch this thing called Sci-Fi.
Okay.
Not sports.
Not fantasy. Except occasionally.
Not really big on fantasy. Just sci-fi.
I mean, you watch Harry Potter, which is fantasy, but don't care about a lot of other fantasy.
That's true.
Well, I mean, you watch Charmed or Buffy. That's fantasy.
I think Buffy's more sci-fi.
How so? Vampires are considered fantasy in almost all incidents.
Then never mind. All right.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
Okay.
You wanna kick the episode off, but...
The Fifth Race Podcast is currently being sponsored by GoToMeeting.
GoToMeeting is an awesome online collaborative tool that has voice over internet and share your desktop kind of thing. And it now includes HD faces, so it's HD resolution.
So you're saying if McKay has to call back from the Pegasus Galaxy to Earth to consult with the integration of ancient technology and human technology with Carter, he can see her face in clear HD?
That is correct. Wonderfully clear HD.
And the schematics for the integration can be shared with live desktop features?
Yes.
Awesome.
So, if you want to try GoToMeeting with HD faces, it will change the way you work. Fifth Race Podcast listeners can try it for free for 30 days. Just go to GoToMeeting.com and click the Try It Free button and use the promo code PODCAST. Be sure to use the promo code PODCAST so we get credit for it. What'd you think, first off?
I like the episode. I do think there were some weird technical issues that didn't necessarily make sense.
Like, why does the Stargate not reintegrate something that's not an entire object?
And why is Ford being able to be dragged back out?
I mean, think about it. The people that go through the Stargate would be whole objects, not connected to the bigger object being the Puddle Jumper. Why wouldn't they just reform then?
Yeah. I mean... And I don't know why it wouldn't reform half the Puddle Jumper either, necessarily. But I guess I'll buy that it doesn't.
That still doesn't make sense with
but
that episode of SG-1
I mean,
where O'Neill doesn't...
I mean, if you take the Puddle Jumper and all of its contents within is being contiguous matter since it's got atmosphere there...
I didn't think about that. Yeah.
But... It doesn't necessarily follow with things that have happened in SG-1, but I think they play around with how the gates work a little bit. And what was the time limit on an open gate in SG-1?
38 minutes.
Oh, it was 38 minutes? But can't other people keep them open for longer?
It's the maximum amount of time with non-relativistic instances is 38 minutes.
Okay.
I mean, the only time I can remember it being open past 38 minutes is like in A Matter of Time, where the wormhole.
Okay.
Or I mean the black hole.
Okay, because I thought there were maybe it did shut down.
What one?
Well, like when they were bombarding our iris.
Well, I guess Anubis did do that too. That had some ancient thing. I think he was just sending enough energy through the gate that it kept it open. Though that doesn't make sense because.
Yeah. Or maybe it was shutting down and he was redialing right away. I
got the impression that it was just open the whole time.
Well, because didn't we try and dial someplace when it
You're
shut
right.
down?
That's how it did happen. He shut down and then it... Yeah. Okay.
Right. Okay. So, the 38 minutes part seems all right. The whole event horizon seems a little weird. They finally suggested the whole bit about how the creature would react to going through. So, my other theory is, why not put Shepard partway, Shepard into it, and leave the creature out, and cut the creature off?
I mean, that would technically work.
I mean, can the creature affect Shepard when Shepard's in the event horizon?
They're both dematerialized. They shouldn't be able to.
But what I mean is, Shepard's dematerialized and the creature's still partly out.
Right. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, like, his leg, the creature's legs would be dematerialized.
Yeah.
I mean, here's an interesting question. When you're dematerialized, like, when they grabbed Ford and pulled him back...
How did he rematerialize?
Yeah.
Yeah. No... I might have bought everything else.
Because think about it.
If they hadn't pulled Ford back out.
Because, if, say, Shepard goes into the event horizon, and then part of the alien's not, and everything is dematerialized, why couldn't you just take the creature that's not dematerialized and, rip it off of... Cause, I mean, not even rip it, because just move it differently in a different direction than he's going... You know what I'm saying?
I mean, if they could pull Ford back out, couldn't they have, let's say, figured out how to get reversed thrust? Back the puddle jumper out of the gate? If you can pull Ford back out, why can't you pull the rest of the ship back out?
I mean, that's true. You could do that.
Okay, let's jump into the episode then. Like that jump into the episode.
Yes.
So, got a puddle jumper. With a different pilot. It's not Shepard. Shepard is injured. He's got a thing on his neck, a creature. Guy's dialing the gate. He's trying to thread the needle. And we notice that the thrust pods are not closing.
Were you concerned?
Well, I wasn't sure whether or not the thrust pods were fully not closing or if they were just cutting away as they were closing. But obviously they didn't fully close. And apparently no warning came up, or the pilot didn't notice how the warning would show. I would have thought, well, one, I'm a little surprised that these thrust pods stick out further than the gate anyway. That the ancients went and designed a ship that you had to close the thrust pods to go through.
I think, honestly, the Stargate's not that big. The ship would just be that much smaller.
You don't think the ancients could have designed
the Stargate's bigger?
Well, no, designed thrust pods that didn't make it wider than the gate?
No, what I'm saying is the ship would be smaller.
Well, maybe the ship compartment would be a little bit smaller.
I mean, they do stick out quite a ways. I don't know.
I'd like to think the ancients could have...
Well, probably.
...designed it differently. I would also... wonder that there wasn't some fail-safe that would have made it readily apparent that they weren't going to fit. Never minding the fact that the gate to Atlantis is facing in on the base such that you have to power down, And, I mean, how do we launch through the gate? I've never seen us launch a puddle jumper out of Atlantis.
What do you mean? Through the gate?
Yeah.
We did that in Rising.
Did we?
Yeah.
We saw it go through?
Mm-hmm.
So, what type of thrust can be provided without the thrust pods out?
Very little.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it has some kind of forward momentum that doesn't need the thrust pods.
Okay, but we need access to the cockpit in order to trigger that, I take.
Probably, yeah.
Okay.
I'm guessing. But yeah, basically, the jumper bay is somewhere like over here. I know you guys can see me. And the jumpers get lowered down into the control room, and then it just goes through.
Yeah, that seems terribly, like, poor planning. Like, I imagine that that isn't exactly a quick thing to set up. I would have had something like the jumper bay off to the side, and the gate faces out over the ocean, and the jumpers take off from the bay and fly around the city and then come and shoot into the gate, and you can send several through quickly. And then when they're coming out, they can come out at speed and don't have to stop on a dime because they shoot out over the ocean. But that's just how I would have designed it.
Yeah, but you don't have that, like, we're coming in quick! And then they gotta, like, stop on a dime.
So what happens if you... So you can never send two jumpers out at a time and both have them come back because you can't crash one into the other?
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems like lousy planning.
Hmm.
So we're gonna come through. We have a medical emergency. There's this thing attached to Shepard's neck. So they're going to quarantine the bay. So the pods don't close, and the jumper gets stuck in the gate. Which, I'm surprised that when it hit the gate, it didn't just force close the pods. Like,
that would have been an ideal way to deal with this situation, but then we couldn't have had this story.
Right.
Like, if they would have been slanted, so like as soon as it hit, it just forced the pods closed, and it just continued on through.
Yeah. Like...
The other way to solve this is to make the pods go all the way out of the ship. Like, all the way up the ship. So, like, none of the ship would fit through if the pods weren't retracted.
Oh, so the ship doesn't even begin to enter the gate.
Right.
Or to have a built-in fail-safe that when the ship registers it's too large to fit through the gate, its autopilot pulls it off course, so it doesn't even begin to enter the gate.
Yeah. Or it hits it and bounces off.
That's the least probable.
Why?
Because of the way that we generally come in and how fast you're going and how bouncing works.
You don't think if you hit the Stargate that it would bounce off your ship?
I think it's more likely that it would shear the pods off the side of the ship and the rest of the ship would continue through. If you had enough force to bounce backwards away from it, wouldn't it just rip the pods off? Because the bulk of the momentum is in the core of the ship, which is entering the gate and not bouncing.
Yeah, but the way they pulled Ford back out, I mean, I would think that it would just bounce and the part that's in the vent horizon would just rematerialize.
But I'm saying if the bulk of your momentum isn't hitting the object it's bouncing against, the part that is hitting it doesn't have enough force to bounce.
I see what you're saying.
And so the shear force rips the pods off.
I got you. Yeah, that actually makes more sense. That seems like it'd breach the back end of the shuttlecraft, or the jumper.
It might, but you wouldn't matter because the jumper would probably be through the event horizon before enough air would escape to do anything.
Hmm, yeah. Maybe this should have made the Stargate bigger.
Or the jumper smaller?
Jumpers are kind of small now.
They are, but just small enough that you didn't have retractable pods.
Or design a ship that doesn't have retractable...
Right.
My
first idea back at the...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, we're discussing the situation with Weir. Rodney thinks the pods haven't retracted. We can't be sure.
Like, I need to know what's happening. Okay, Lieutenant Ford, back it up for me.
And Ford goes back to the beginning, which is partly to give her information about what we discovered on this mission. So we head back out to the place where the Wraith base was. But we didn't detect the Wraith base, so we went down to investigate on foot, discovered the base, which was supposedly in the side of a mountain, was gone, along with said mountain. So apparently this base was a ship. And the ship had been parked for a long time, and had become rather overgrown with foliage. So did they, like, bury their ship intentionally? Or does the ship have dirt on it all the time? Because I think it's a little unlikely for it to get dirt covered to get the foliage. Because they're talking about hundreds of years, not... They said hibernates for hundreds of years.
Right.
Not thousands. Hundreds.
How long would it take to cover it with dirt? Or, I mean...
Through natural means?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're looking at thousands, if not tens of thousands, to get sufficient dirt cover through natural means. And I'm not even sure how you would... I mean, generally, mountains get built up by pushing up land tectonically, which wouldn't work with the ship.
Right.
On there.
The way that I figured it was, it landed, and then dirt kind of blew on it, and
dirt doesn't blow. That's not how mountains form.
But I mean, it's not a mountain. I mean, the ship was the mountain.
Yeah, but it needed sufficient dirt covering on it to get the plant life to grow. How does that much dirt show up there for the plants to begin growing without the dirt then, say, blowing off?
Maybe they had a really bad dirt storm followed by a light rain that made it stick. Or a light rain fall. No, wait, it has to be the other way around. A really bad dirt storm followed by light rain.
Okay. That's at least feasible, maybe.
Maybe it's that crazy-ass plant from SG-1 that grew like crazy over the ship.
And so there wasn't any dirt on there anyway? It was just clinging to the ship?
Well...
That's the most believable thing you've come up with so far.
Concept sketches for this, if I remember right, there are actually trees there too. So unless the crazy... I shouldn't say the A word, huh? The crazy plant eventually grows crazy large trees. That doesn't make sense. But, I mean, you don't... Let's just say it was 1,000 years. You don't think enough dirt could have blew up there that...
That's not how dirt and erosion work. That's reverse erosion.
Maybe... No. I got nothing.
Yeah. I mean, they can intentionally camouflage their ship, and that's fine. And maybe the process of landing kicks up a whole bunch of dirt on top of the ship. But...
Maybe to be safe, the Wraith ship kind of...
Would they bury themselves to...
Not completely, but like, you know, like say it lands... Maybe it wasn't a mountain, but it was kind of a hole they landed in. So then dirt blew and covered it up.
Again, that's reverse erosion.
What do you mean?
Dirt goes downhill. It will blow over things.
That's what I'm saying, though. They're in a hole.
Right, but it looks like a mountain because the dirt's on top of the ship. What keeps the dirt on top of the ship?
Maybe...
The reason dirt doesn't all blow away is because there are plants with roots holding the dirt in place. So, you need the dirt to stay still long enough for the plants to take root.
Tim. I got nothing.
Okay, so...
I'm thinking it was the crazy plant from SG-1.
Okay. So we have a missing Wraith base ship. Shepard comes to... And we explain what's going on to him. And this is about the time I suggested maybe we could pass Shepard into the event horizon and it would hold him in stasis so the creature doesn't bother him anymore. Then it already is.
That's a good idea.
Well, this may or may not be a good idea. And at various point in time, I also came up with theories of stick part of the creature through, and while it's partially dematerialized, sever it from Shepard.
It was highly annoying. Tim was talking through the whole episode. It was very, very annoying. Go ahead.
Well, I had you pause it most of the time.
I know. I was just kidding.
Propose these things. Of course, in the counterpoint, you could put Shepard partly into the event horizon and sever the creature while it's sticking outside. These all seemed like reasonable ideas when I was thinking of them.
So you didn't come up with Kill Shepard and then maybe the bug will leave him alone?
No, that was not on the list. Though I did think the compound they were going to get the creature to react to was going to be the chocolate, just because that would be funnier.
I thought that was funny, but it's like, nope.
Like, well, I was waiting for them to have Shepard eat the chocolate, and the minimum of, like, the mild amount of caffeine in the chocolate would trigger some reaction with it. Or maybe the sugar. I don't, like apply the chocolate to it and it reacts to the sugar.
I like how it reacted to salt water.
Well, that actually makes a good deal of sense.
It wouldn't like being on Earth very much.
Well, it would be perfectly fine being on Earth in, let's say, fresh water. I mean, alligators. Perfectly fine in fresh water, go blind in salt water.
Okay. Now my eyes hurt.
Because I said alligators go blind?
I don't know. Okay, go ahead.
The situation is when the 38 minutes, which is growing shorter and shorter as time progresses, that the Event Horizon could stay open, ends, the ship will be cut in half. The front half of the ship will disappear entirely, cease to exist, and the back half of the ship will be floating in space and explosively decompress. So we're going to close the bulkhead door so that at least the rear section will only be leaking oxygen like a sieve.
I was like, will that work? Well, it'd be kind of like a screen door on a submarine. Yeah, that's going to work really well then.
I was about to say, so it's still going to explosively decompress? Because last time I checked, if you put a screen door on a submarine, it can't hold the pressure of the water back. And so it just rips through.
I don't think it'll explosively decompress, but I would bet that their oxygen would go out quickly.
He could have just said, we'll leak air like a sieve. And that would have worked. Like, he could have said, so will that work? And he'll say, it might buy us a couple of minutes. We'll slowly asphyxiate as opposed to being exposed to the hard vacuum instantaneously. All sorts of ways he could have explained it that I would have preferred to screen door on a submarine. Which I didn't even find that terribly funny.
Hmm. I liked it.
Okay. The Czech scientist, who nobody can remember the name of, and I didn't write down, so therefore I can't remember the name of.
Zelenka.
Zelenka. Is working on a simulation in Puddle Jumper 2.
Radek Zelenka.
And he's trying to isolate the control path that would allow for the rear compartment to manually close the engine pod.
Why didn't you write his name down?
Well, when it first was said, I didn't think it was important, and I was writing down other things. Is his name important later?
I don't know. I was just curious why you picked one person's name to write down, but not another.
Whose person? What person's name have I picked to write down?
I don't know. I mean, just in general. Just the way you said it.
Oh. I generally pick the names of people that would appear to be key characters important at this point in time. The ones that appear in the title credits are important. Maybe somebody else might be important. But I'm not going to write down every scientist or minor technician's name just because it gets mentioned.
Okay. That makes sense.
So Dr. Weir can help Zelenka by stopping talking. And Tayla has heard stories of these creatures from her father, and she thinks they might be related to the Wraith since they appear to suck the life force, which is how it's healed itself. And Shepard explained how he ran into the web of this creature. I mean, it looked like a spider web when he was fighting the Wraith as they were heading back. And they described the creature to Beckett. It's got two pincer thingies or proboscises in Shepard's carotid artery. It's got four legs wrapped around his neck. It's got a soft underbelly, hard outer shell. So that's that creature. Hollings wants to communicate with Tayla in this death ritual thing that their culture has. Dr. Weir is very put off by this. I think she could have been more diplomatic.
Say that again, what?
Okay, so when Hollings wants to do this death ritual.
Oh, okay.
And Dr. Weir will have nothing to do with it. She doesn't say, I'll put you on when we have 2 minutes left. I'll put you on when it seems imminent. We still have a lot of time. Wait until there's less. Doesn't say any of that. She will have none of this death preparation ritual. And that seems a little out of character for her. Maybe.
I think she just didn't want anybody to think they were going to die.
Right. She wanted positive thoughts. She didn't want to give the team this idea that they thought they were going to die or anything else. She didn't want to admit the fact that they might die. So I think she was being a little escapist. She didn't want to admit the potential that they might die. And because she wasn't willing to admit it herself, she wouldn't let anyone else admit it.
Right.
And so I figure as a leader, she really should be prepared that people do die on missions, that not everyone can come back safe and sound every time, and that she needed to have been prepared for that. I feel like she should say, while there's still chance I'm not going to admit it, I'll let you go on when it seems eminent that they can't. There's still a lot of time left. You say this only takes a couple of minutes. Well, I'll let you go on when there's a couple of minutes. Because if it's something that's really so important, then why don't they prepare like this ritual when she sets out on the mission anyway?
Right. I don't know.
If this is a ritual that you're going to do when someone may still die, and not, you know, is dying. Because would it have broken culture if they'd had this ritual and they'd saved them anyway?
I don't know.
And it just, the way she handled the situation seemed wrong. And Dr. Beckett is finding out what everybody has on hand so as to figure out what to get the creature off with. And so they're going through the supplies. We find out that this guy Kavanaugh thinks that there's a chance that they'll blow the drive and cause this flying bomb to come through.
That kind of suck.
Right. Everyone else thinks it's only a slight chance. He wanted her to be appraised of the situation. She said, thank you very much. You've appraised me. We'll go ahead with this test anyway. We'll take that risk. And he comes and confronts her. And she chews him out even more. And I'm not sure why we're setting up Kavanaugh this way. Other than to make Rodney seem very nice and personable in comparison.
I like how she was like, if you don't return to your workstation, I'll dial in a spot in hospitable world where you could be as self-important as you wish.
Yeah.
And the other part where, you just busted me like a private. I was like, the Air Force doesn't have privates. And neither do I, because you just chopped them off.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure what he was expecting. She said, thank you for appraising me of the situation. That she wasn't giving up. She thought the risk was worth taking. And he needs to accept that. I'm not sure what he thinks is going on. The fact is, he probably was okay with his team and everything else up until he goes and has an even bigger fight with Dr. Weir.
Yeah.
So Zelenka finally isolates the path. We tell Rodney. Apparently, this still leaves a whole bunch of doubt. I don't know how isolating the path doesn't instantly give you access, but only gives you a better chance of finding the right one.
Yeah.
but apparently so. Rodney says he'll have about 7 or 9 seconds when he will realize that there is going to be an explosion. So if he tells Dr. Weir to close the shield, she should do so and be ready to do so. So to get this creature off of Shepard, we're going to try everything. So we try some iodine and we try some alcohol. And Taylor says, didn't he suggest salt? And it's like, that was a metaphor, so we throw some salt on. Rodney's having a hypoglycemic emergency, so we give him the candy bar, which was also why I thought eventually we would try the chocolate. But next we throw water, it starts reacting, so it's either reacting to the water or the combination of salt and water. We still don't actually technically know.
I gotta believe that it's not water, just because I would think that it rains on this planet, being that there are trees.
Well, it might sense rain is coming and find some place to hide. But, yes, it makes more sense to react poorly to salt water. Which is why the doctor assumes that. It is the thing that makes the most logical sense. Some things do well in salt water, won't do well in fresh water. Other things can't stand salt water.
Right.
So, when it reacts poorly, Rodney gets bumped, and he accidentally triggers the engines to push him forward a little bit. So now, the door is not holding out the event horizon. I was trying to figure out if Rodney had any chance of figuring out how to trigger those thrusters again, and just muscle the jumper through.
Hmm.
But apparently that's not how we're going to solve this situation. But we figure out, Shepard doesn't think there's any chance of him surviving this because the Wraith let him go. That after he got bitten by this thing, the Wraith came up to him and left. So it thought he was already dead. Basically. We now question how this creature reacts to gate travel, whether or not putting Shepard in the gate will cause the thing to go crazy. I don't know why the gate would cause that sort of reaction. I mean, iodine and alcohol didn't cause any weird reactions.
Yeah.
Salt by itself didn't cause a weird reaction. Salt water does. Why does the gate cause a reaction? But we decide we are going to stop Shepard's heart, and it's going to release from him because it's taken the life force from him. He can't draw on his strength. This does make plausible sense.
Let's kill Shepard.
Well, let's make the creature think Shepard is dead. Of course, we use the
defibrillator.
Yeah, the defib machine to stop Shepard's heart. It takes a moment. The creature releases, and then Ford shoots it. I thought we were going to throw a whole bunch of salt water on it. Didn't seem to like that very well.
Where are we going to get all the salt water from?
Well, I don't know how much salt water it would take to kill it. Or freak it out enough. But, I mean, we had some manner of salt left, I think. We certainly had water left. We shoot it. It seems to be dead. Ford throws his jacket over it. We can't restart Shepard's heart, so Tayla takes Shepard into the event horizon, which will hold him in stasis until we get a full medical team when we hopefully get the ship through. If not, well, Shepard was dead, now he's double dead. Apparently we didn't have to do anything about the holes in his artery.
Those are probably...
There's some enzyme the creature releases that stops the bleeding?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that seems a little unbelievable. If this thing is designed to suck a person to death, why would it stop the bleeding? Mosquitoes stop the bleeding, but they're not designed to suck the full extent of your blood out of your body. They just get a small bit and then leave.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, considerably larger hole in his artery.
That's kind of a problem.
We have only a couple of minutes, less than 2 minutes, when we finally get the pods retracted. Hurrah. But we're not moving because momentum has stopped.
I mean, did you think they were just going to retract the pods and then just go through?
Thought there's a possibility. If the way the gate works, it needs to, like, does the gate pull in the rest of the mass if it's got a mass lodged in it?
Apparently not.
I mean, with all the weird things the gate apparently does, why not? But apparently it does need momentum, and our momentum has stopped. The forward half still theoretically had the momentum from when it entered the gate.
It's dematerialized, though. I mean, does dematerialized matter still have momentum when matter turns to energy?
I don't know. I mean, momentum is energy.
Right, but if you have no mass...
Okay, well, so here's the question. When we get so we decide, and it's actually Kavanaugh that comes up with blowing the rear hatch, and the explosive decompression will push us through, which he came up shortly after I did. But if the momentum that was being... Because the momentum transfers to whatever comes out of the gate. You come out as fast as you went in.
Right.
So, here's a question. If the front half had momentum when it entered the gate, and the rear half gains its momentum later, what happens when the puddle jumper comes out with different momentums for both sections of the puddle jumper? How does that work?
It should either rip itself in half.
Or compress in on itself, depending on which had more momentum at the time. Or the momentum should have, from the front half, should have pulled the rest in.
I don't think that. I think that it should either rip itself in half, or the two masses momentum, or the two parts masses momentum, just equalize as it comes out of the gate. Like, the first half comes out really fast, or at one speed, and the second half comes out at another speed, but at the point at which they're connected,
it
equalizes.
But it is pretty ridiculous.
What momentum should the people that are inside the first half come out at, too?
Never minding what the relative, like, Shepard and Taylor walking into the thing when the thing is stuck in the event horizon,
right.
How that works.
Right.
All sorts of issues. I mean, the people in the ship have whatever momentum of the ship they're in, plus whatever minimum amount of momentum from walking in it.
Right.
I mean, it's like a fly moving in a train.
Right.
The fly can only fly at whatever speeds a fly buzzes at, like, through the compartment. But because it's in the train, in the contained air supply in the train, it can move at 100 miles an hour relative
right.
to the Earth's surface.
Right.
This was a nice episode for all sorts of interesting things. They revive Shepard. We don't address any of the issues with Kavanaugh.
Did it show him reviving Shepard?
Yes. You remember when they kept trying to start his heart and they finally saw the little thing come on? And they took Ford out because Ford was the one that pulled the hatch to decompress, and the creature, which wasn't really dead, got sucked out. And Ford hung on during the explosive decompression as the ship moved forward.
Shepard didn't get revived, though. Then, they said it didn't work, and they sent him through.
Yeah, but I mean, when we're back on the...
Oh, okay.
Other side. I mean, the end of the episode. Shepard's revived. Ford's okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I already said Shepard was in the event horizon.
Okay.
We were talking about the explosive decompression. They go through. They revive Shepard.
Okay. Right.
This is the end of the episode. We don't deal with Kavanaugh anymore. Shepard thanks Rodney. Rodney is a likable character for all of his quirks when compared to somebody like Kavanaugh, who is really obnoxious. How do they find these obnoxious people and put them on this mission?
Scientists tend to be obnoxious, I think. That's why I mean...
Really?
Really smart people tend to be obnoxious. I mean, that's why I'm obnoxious.
I don't know. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. I know plenty of smart people who aren't nearly as obnoxious as these people.
It's really, really smart people that are obnoxious, though. That's what I was told.
Oh. Yeah, well, and I guess that is true some of the time, at least. But I'd like to think if you know you're in a room with a bunch of other really smart people. I mean, Samantha Carter, really smart, not obnoxious.
Yeah, she's nice. That's true. It's a guy thing.
Oh, guys are obnoxious.
Really nice, obnoxious guys. Or really smart guys are obnoxious. Girls aren't. I have no idea.
Okay.
Hi, this is Kevin Batchelder. And this is the Saturday B Movie Reel.
Do something. Shoot it! Shoot it!
That about describes it, yeah.
All right, everybody stay here.
We look specifically at the Sci-Fi Channel's original movies. You know the ones. The ones that air on Saturday night.
Be known throughout the ages as an instant classic.
We need a bigger gator!
Limb cutting, yes. And blood squirting from...
Flying limbs, I called it in my notes.
What could go wrong?
We look on a regular basis at the movies as they come out, and since they've been over 200 of them, we do go back and look at many of them that are now out on DVD. By this point, I had completely forgotten any semblance of seeing if this actually makes any sense from a plot point of view. So come on by, get involved, and have some fun.
Check us out at SaturdayBMovieReel.com.
Our future depends on it. Make it safe.
So, for all of the weird issues, I still like the episode. We meet this new creature. Maybe it will show up again later. Maybe not. Maybe it will give us insight as into the evolutionary pattern of the Wraith. Maybe not. We get, I guess, learn that maybe the other pilots that aren't Shepard haven't been fully trained into noticing warnings about when the pods are fully retracted. Or maybe the ancients, in their infinite wisdom, forgot to put a warning that the pods aren't fully retracted.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone agreed that it wasn't pilot error in forgetting to retract them, that somehow they were damaged and didn't fully retract, which is true. How the thing was supposed to say, hey, they haven't been fully retracted, we don't know, but the pilot didn't notice it, and that's why we wound up in this situation. This is the type of situation that only works in an episode right at the beginning of the series. This episode doesn't work 10 episodes from now.
Why wouldn't it?
Well, I feel like you would have had to had somebody else piloting things every once in a while.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Enough that...
I mean, this could be technically like...
That there isn't a warning that says, hey, the things haven't fully retracted?
No, I'm saying that, I mean, with your thought on the... pilots not really knowing what they're doing...
This could lead to more training for the pilots?
Well, that or the fact that...
I'm surprised. I would have expected the pilots to have been fully trained before they're going out on all sorts of missions anyway.
I don't know.
Like, spend some time. Like, Shepard ran on the first thing because it was an imminent thing that just occurred.
Right.
But now that you're here, take the people that can use the technology and can fly the ships and have them do some practice runs.
Maybe it's still soon enough that they really don't know how to use... I mean, Shepard can fly it, but does he know everything about it?
Well, I'm sure he doesn't know everything about it, but generally, things like warning lights are supposed to be pretty obvious.
True. That's a good point.
And so, you know, if I was doing things, I might have just tried something like, let's say... flying at a gate with my pods open just to see what the ship does. Not very fast, pull off at the last second, but just to see the ship. What does the ship do? Run some tests.
Maybe they're worried about the Wraith, you know, coming and getting them, or, I mean, I don't know.
Find some other planet. I'm sure there is another spaceborne Stargate somewhere.
You don't think it's just that one?
It would seem terribly convenient if it was just the one.
Yeah.
So I will.
Isn't it weird how we haven't found any space gates in the Milky Way galaxy?
You know, I suppose so. I suppose it's also possible that we could find them in the future. And or they hadn't come up with the idea of space gates when they're in the Milky Way and only started using that idea when they arrived in the Pegasus Galaxy.
Maybe.
Maybe those secrets will be revealed later, and maybe they will never be explained.
Next time on Stargate Atlantis, we will learn why there are space gates in the Pegasus Galaxy, but not the Milky Way Galaxy. Tune in. No.
Oh. I was going to say that's terribly convenient.
What is the next episode about?
I have no idea.
Well, I was talking to myself. The name of the episode is Suspicion. And the next SG-1 episode is called Icon.
Good for it.
Ooh. Okay. All right. So you liked the episode? I liked it too.
I liked it in spite of its issues.
There were issues. Lots of issues.
The biggest issue, really, I feel, was pulling Ford back through the gate.
I agree with that. That was the biggest issue. It doesn't make sense. I mean, it just seems like you'd pull your arm off.
Although everything else made some level of sense.
You know how we referenced, or was that in the conversation, or was that in the recording? I don't remember. But in Enemy Within, didn't Teal'c and Kowalski, like, partially go through the gate, and then they pulled each other in and out a couple of times when they were fighting?
You know, they might have.
I mean, if you truly dematerialize, that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, we also talked about the fact that in Shades of Grey, I think that was the name of the episode, where O'Neill leaves his hand in the gate.
Okay.
What, you got some amazing text from someone?
Kind of. All right, so this is funny. I was on a podcast the other day called Scruffy Thinking.
Okay.
With the guy from the episode, I shouldn't say the guy, my friend Kanan from episode Orpheus. And we were talking about Star Trek versus Stargate.
Okay.
And he just released the first episode. And it's called, would you like to guess what it's called? And I'm almost 100%.
Rings versus transporters?
No. And I'm almost 100% sure. And it was more of a discussion. It ended up being more of a discussion on all of sci-fi. But I'm almost sure I said this line in the episode. There, episode one, there are no calves in Battlestar Galactica.
Okay.
I'm almost sure I said that. He was like, well, what's the difference between Battlestar and Firefly? And I was like, there are no cows in Battlestar Galactica, are there? Although I haven't seen it. So anyway, if you're interested, the name of the podcast is Scruffy Thinking, and it's kind of a, I mean, it's not all going to be about sci-fi.
I was about to say, is the fact it's called Scruffy Thinking from, like, Scruffy Nerf Herder from Star Wars, or?
No. He has this idea. There's an interesting Wikipedia article called Scruffy Thinking versus Neat Thinking.
Okay.
And he considers himself a scruffy thinker, I guess, and I kind of would say that I'm the same.
Okay, so, I haven't read this, so I don't know what's scruffy thinking versus neat thinking.
I mean, it's interesting. I can't remember some of the other show titles. Oh, there's an interesting one. I wasn't on this one, but it was about where is the Leonardo DiCaprio of our Leonardo da Vinci of our time? Like,
or you can't have a Leonardo da Vinci of our time.
Why?
Well, Leonardo da Vinci was Leonardo da Vinci precisely because of his versatility in all subjects. You can't become an expert in all the subjects available now because it takes so much to become an expert in any one subject.
Or Albert Einstein.
Now, Albert Einstein...
Or Richard Feynman.
I mean, theoretically, you could have the next Einstein or the next... Because Einstein was specific to a given field. But Da Vinci was Da Vinci precisely because he was the Renaissance man. He was an expert in so many fields.
I'm not sure. I'm interested. He wouldn't, when I asked him what the answer was, he wouldn't tell me what it was, so I don't know.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, that just got released on iTunes. Or on the web. It'll be on iTunes shortly. I was also on a podcast last night called Geek Fight. About Stargate.
Oh, I think I've heard of that podcast.
Where they take like 32 topics and put them in tournament-style brackets and go back and forth until there's only one. That was quite interesting. It's like 3 hours of podcasting straight.
Oh my word.
So, anyway. All right, back to what were we talking about?
I think we were finishing the episode. I think we're done with the episode. We both kind of liked it in spite of its issues. We were talking a little bit about the whole pulling a person back through the gate. Does it work or not? Maybe it does. It seems like they're creating gate issues that may conflict with past events or other things. But whatever it is what it is. We just have to live with it. Why don't you close out the episode?
If you would like to leave feedback, you can email feedback@thefifthracepodcast.com. You can voicemail us at 206-338-6530. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/StargatePodcast. Join our Facebook page at facebook.com/StargatePodcast. Leave us a review at iTunes or your favorite podcast directory of choice. You can tell your friends, tell your family, tell everybody you know about the awesomeness that is the Fifth Race. That's pretty much it. This has been episode 4, Pegasus edition of the Fifth Race podcast. 38 minutes. I'm Justin Nolan.
And I'm Tim Phillips.
And I'll see you all next time on the other side of the galaxy.
It's in another galaxy. It's not the other side.
All right. See you in another galaxy. You ready?
Yeah. Are you done sniffing?
No.
So which A word should you not say?
I said crazy ass.
Oh, that one. Okay. I sat there, I'm like, ancient? I have no idea what A word he's talking about.
I don't know.
Well.
Do you need to get that?
Probably not. Maybe. I have no idea what number it is.
Oh, okay.
If it's important, I'll get a message. Okay.
Thank you so much for correcting me.
I don't know. I feel like it sounds less stupid that way. Maybe.
Maybe. Oh, I need to stop it, though, huh?
Yeah.